coming up on Economics Explored.
And so the idea is that we'll have a whole raft of incentives, whether they're $300 for everyone that goes along and gets vaccinated or some lottery prizes, but they only get paid if we meet the national vaccination target. So I'd set a target, and I'd set a really tough target, a high target, not this flimsy or soft 70%, but something that's really out there in terms of leading the world, 85% or 90%.
Welcome to the Economics Explored podcast. I'm your host, Gene Tunney. I'm a professional economist based in Brisbane, Australia, and I'm a former Australian Treasury official. This is episode 100 on incentivising vaccinations against COVID-19, or cash for jabs. This is topical given that in late July 2021, US President Joe Biden called for US states to offer $100 to the newly vaccinated. My guest this episode to chat about incentivising vaccinations is Isaac Katz. Isaac is a director of Harding Katz, a consulting practice based in Melbourne, Australia, specialising in utility regulation, energy market reform, business strategy and applied economics. He has provided economic and regulatory advice to regulators, government and regulated businesses on a wide range of strategy and policy issues. Isaac has a Master of Arts specialising in economics from Cambridge University in the UK. Prior to moving to Australia, Isaac worked as a senior economic assistant for the UK electricity regulator, now Ofgem, and as a pool price analyst for a regional electricity company. He's also worked as an economist for Railtrack, focusing on aspects of the regulatory framework prior to and immediately after privatisation. Incidentally, privatisation is one of my favourite topics to discuss, so I may try to get Isaac back on the show to chat about that in the future. Based on Isaac's work experience, you would guess that he would have some insightful things to say about vaccination incentives, and you would be correct. Before we get to my conversation with Isaac, as always, let me thank those listeners who've been in touch with me. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions relating to this episode or previous episodes, then please send them to contact@economicsexplored.com. I'd love to hear from you. Also, please check out the show notes for links to materials mentioned in this episode and also for any clarifications of points made in the episode. Righto, now for my conversation with Isaac Katz. I hope you enjoy it. Isaac Katz from Harding Katz Consultants in Melbourne, Australia. Good to have you on the program.
Yeah, very nice to be here, Gene. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Isaac. So you've got in touch with me previously because you listened to the show, and I'm grateful for that. And you've also got in touch with me regarding one of the topical issues that we have in Australia at the moment, which relates to the vaccination rollout. So we'll chat about that in a moment. First, I'd like to ask you about this field that you specialise in of regulatory economics or economic regulation. Could you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, well, it's all about trying to give incentives to monopoly businesses, that's electricity networks and water companies and gas companies, trying to give them incentives to do the right thing, which might mean reducing costs or improving customer service and customer experience. And that's really been the focus of my career is in economic regulation, try and improve the incentives on businesses. And obviously, there's a link there between that work and the sort of incentives that we might think about in relation to improving vaccination rates in relation to COVID.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. I want to cover economic regulation sometime in the future because it's an important topic. I mean, you've got businesses that are so-called natural monopolies, like it's if you're going to have a water network and you're going to distribute water across your city, then it makes sense for it to be owned by one company. But then you want to limit the ability of that company to exploit its monopoly power, to exploit its market power. And so you need some overlay of regulation there.
Yeah, yes. That's exactly right. So it's about how do you get those businesses to actually do the right thing, as I say. And you might say, we've got some work to do there, Gene. Maybe we haven't done a great job on all of that, but it's been around a long time now. It was there sort of at the beginning when CPI minus X regulation was first developed in the UK, and it's been exported all around the world. So some quite simple ideas in economic regulation have certainly been exported and utilised in many different countries and in many different sectors.
Absolutely. So I might come back to that in a future episode, a very important topic. But you make a good point that economics is about incentives, and we're interested in here in how we can incentivize people to get vaccinated. So Joe Biden came out in late July and he's encouraging US states to offer, I think it's US $100 to get citizens to get vaccinated against COVID. In Australia here we had Anthony Albanese, the federal opposition leader. He proposed a $300 payment to everyone who gets vaccinated and people who've already been vaccinated. And so this would end up costing, I don't know, $6 billion or something. And people were saying, oh, this is profligate because these people have already got vaccinated, so it's a waste of money to pay them. And so we had a big debate last week. So we're recording this on the 11th of August 2021. We had a big debate in Australia about whether this was a sensible proposal. Isaac, could we start with the question? I'd be grateful for your thoughts on why would it make sense for governments to offer some sort of incentive? So whether it's a federal government, a state government, or a local government, why would it make sense? Why can't we just trust people to make the best decisions themselves?
Yeah, well, it's a very good question, because I think when we see people doing things that we don't think they ought to do, either they're doing too much of something or not enough of something else, we tend to think there's a failure in the market, there's a market failure, and we need to intervene. And I think it's quite right to ask the question, well, what exactly is that market failure? Can we put our finger on it? And if we can't, I think we've got to be suspicious that there's no need to intervene. But I think in relation to COVID and the national vaccination rates, I think there is an argument here for intervention, which is really around the idea that there's a public benefit, which is much bigger than the sum of the private benefits. And that additional public benefit is really in the form of herd immunity, where essentially if we get a certain percentage of people vaccinated, then everybody benefits because there's this thing called herd immunity, which means then that we can sort of open up the economy and avoid all of these lockdowns and all of the problems that come with that. So that benefit that we get only if we get lots of people vaccinated is something that we see broadly across the whole economy. It's not something that we're going to see in terms of individual benefits.
This is where Australia has lagged the rest of the developed economies. I mean, it's just terrible how badly we've done in terms of vaccination. I think we might have maybe 1 in 5 Australians fully vaccinated now. And because of that, because we've still got low rates of vaccination compared with places like the US or the UK, we're having these lockdowns again. So you're currently in lockdown, aren't you, in Melbourne? I was in lockdown last week. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And you can tell, I mean, obviously, I've been vaccinated, so I've got two doses. But because we haven't got high levels of vaccination across the whole economy, we're still in lockdown. That's a very good example where I've got this private benefit myself in terms of being vaccinated and protected, but I'm not getting the benefit of herd immunity, which would be the economy being open up.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is what Joe Rogan missed. So Joe Rogan, on his podcast, I think it was a couple of months ago, it was a bit controversial because what he said was, if you're young and you're healthy, you know, if you're in your 20s, then I can't see why you need to be vaccinated. But what he didn't appreciate, and this is where Fauci came out and was critical, I don't know if he was directly critical of Joe Rogan or whether it was just that idea they asked him about, I can't remember precisely, but what he missed was this idea that it's not just a private benefit, it's a public benefit. If you get vaccinated, there's that spillover benefit or externality, positive externality, as economists would call it. And so therefore it might make some sense for some incentive to be given, particularly given the huge cost of lockdown. So, I mean, it's just devastating the economy down in Sydney at the moment, for example, where they've had, they've been in lockdown for weeks now. I mean, you experienced that in Melbourne last year, just how devastating it is to the local economy. Yeah. Yeah, to the hospitality sector in particular. Okay, so Isaac, you've made a proposal. You've written a discussion paper, and I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Could you tell us, what does economics tell us about what an optimal incentive for vaccination could look like? What are you proposing? Could you tell us that, please?
Yes, Jane. The thing that strikes me is that we really need an incentive around this idea that we're trying to get the national vaccination rate as high as we possibly can. And these individual incentives that we've seen, like the Anthony Albanese suggestion, they're great because they drive individuals to go and get vaccinated. If you get $300, you say, well, I quite fancy getting $300, so now I'm going to decide to get vaccinated. And that's good. But what it doesn't do still is pick up this idea that it's not just you getting vaccinated that's important. It's actually trying to get the national vaccination rate up. So as we were saying earlier, that's really the goal. The goal isn't to get Jean vaccinated or Isaac vaccinated or an individual vaccinated. It's actually to get these broader benefits from herd immunity. So incentives that are just geared around individual decisions, I think, are really deficient. And it is much better to have an incentive around national vaccination rates. So what I would do is set a national vaccination target. And interestingly, you know, the government hasn't set a target. And I think we know why, because when governments set targets, they're held accountable to them. And of course, they're probably going to miss them, particularly if targets depend on what individuals do and they don't really have control over all the individuals. And so there's a real reluctance to set these targets. And if there is a target mentioned, it's a pretty soft target. I mean, we've had Scott Morrison talk about 70%, which the experts are telling us wouldn't achieve herd immunity anyway. So it's a pretty soft target and not a very effective one. So my idea is really to tie these incentive payments not to what individuals do, but to the achievement of a national target. Now, the national target in my scheme wouldn't be a public policy or a health policy target. It would purely be driven around whether these incentive payments are paid out or not. And so the idea is that we'll have a whole raft of incentives, whether they're $300 for everyone that goes along and gets vaccinated or some lottery prizes, but they only get paid if we meet the national vaccination target. So I'd set a target, and I'd set a really tough target, a high target, not this flimsy or soft 70%, but something that's really out there in terms of leading the world, 85% or 90%. And I'd set it at a particular date as well. So I'd look at a date when we've solved these supply side problems. So let's say it's December. Let's say it's a week before Christmas. So we have a clear end date, which we're all crying out for. You know, as you say, we've been suffering lockdown for a very, very long time. We're looking for an end date. We're looking for a way out of this thing. What I would suggest is that we have a clear end date, week before Christmas, say, all the supply sides are sorted out. Everyone's had an opportunity to get vaccinated. And if we meet the target, a stretch target by that date, then these incentives are paid out. If we don't meet that target, there are no incentive payments. You know, that's a simple idea, but it's one that radically changes the dynamics, because what it means is that instead of just focusing on your own interests, which we've said before, you know, really isn't enough. What we begin to do is think about that national target. It becomes a focus for everybody, because you know that your payment is only going to be made if we all collectively meet that target. And now a few different things hang off that. I care not just about collecting my $300, but I care about my neighbours collecting their $300. I care about my workmates collecting their $300 and my household collecting their $300, as we're all working towards this goal. And having a clear end date as well and a clear target creates an environment where we can actually drive some good marketing. So you can imagine then that we can begin as a community to work towards that collective goal. So it changes the dynamic and the whole conversation around this. And I think it gives us a real source of optimism as well, that we could actually knock this thing over by Christmas. We don't want to be languishing at this 35% vaccination rate that we're sitting at the moment. We want to be leading the way. We want to be getting 85% or 90%. We want the thing over at Christmas, and we can all work together to do that. So I think this is a simple change. If you think about the Anthony Albanese thing, it's just quite a modest change to what he's suggesting, what other people have suggested about lotteries and so on. But in some sense, it's quite a radical change in terms of the dynamics.
Yes. Okay, just on some of those incentives around the world, I just might introduce this into the conversation. Well, there's a great article in The Conversation, the website, that features articles by various academics around the world. And it notes that New Jersey, for example, is picking up the tab for a free beer for those who can prove they get a shot. Now, whether that's going to be sufficient incentive, I don't know. Maryland is offering state employees $100. Lancaster, California is trying to encourage teens to get inoculated by entering their names in a raffle for college scholarships worth up to $10,000. So there are all these examples around the world. I think some of them are fascinating. So I guess it'd be good to sort of, I'll ask you a bit more about how your proposal could work, what level of incentive, the sort of behaviour you expect. So you do expect people to then encourage their families and their friends, and could we have, would there be prizes for people who are much better at doing that sort of thing? So could we keep track of how many people you've encouraged to get the vaccination, and then that could make you eligible for a certain amount of prizes? Like that could be something interesting. But before we get to that, one thing I'm curious about is just what is the level of resistance to a vaccination for COVID-19 out there? I mean, we see that like a community like Mullumbimby in northern New South Wales, or Nimbin, I mean, you've got all the counterculture types there, the hippies, and they're going to be anti-vax. They just don't believe in vaccinations, but that's going to be a small percentage of the population. Then you've got this larger vaccine hesitant group, people who are worried because they perceive that, oh, this is all being developed too quickly. And look, I think there's enough evidence that these vaccines work and they're safe, or relative, well, taking into account the great benefits you get from them. I mean, there is a very, very infinitesimal risk, but they're generally, you'd have to say that it's best to get vaccinated. Have you thought about how many, what is a sort of that stretch target? Were you saying 85% or 90%?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, in terms of what people are doing out there, you know, I think sometimes when we hear people say that people are vaccine hesitant, you know, it's a bit of a euphemism for there's some stupid people out there who don't really understand the science, and they're making some bad decisions, and they really need to be chastised and re-educated. And I don't really put any straw by that whatsoever. I think people are making choices that are good for them. They're weighing up these risks, the risks that they perceive in terms of catching COVID, which at the moment, you know, if you're in regional Victoria or regional New South Wales or Queensland, you might say that's extremely low. And you're weighing that up against the risk of a serious negative medical outcome, a blood clot, from taking AstraZeneca. You're weighing up those things. And people are saying, I'll wait and see. You know, I had a chat to a local barista at a coffee shop the other week, and I asked her, are you going to get vaccinated? And she said, I'm going to wait and see.
Mm.
And then, what is it that you're waiting for? I mean, we know that millions of people have died around the world. We know that we've seen pictures of mass burials in different countries, seen pictures of people not being able to breathe in hospital. So intellectually, we know that there's a serious problem out there, and people understand that. People are not stupid. But for her, she's saying, well, I'll wait and see, because she knows that the risk of catching COVID at the moment is very small for her. And she also knows that as more time goes on, there'll be more and more information about the safety of these vaccines. And this is probably a perfectly rational decision for her to say, I'll wait and see. But for us, who are all trying to get herd immunity, it's not at all helpful. And so that's why these incentives are quite good, because to think about the dynamic for her and the calculation for her, if she has this possibility of getting a big prize, or even a small prize, or even $300, you know, whatever it is, or $150, whatever it is, on a particular date. So this is a fixed date, and it's only going to happen the once. You know, so now that dynamic changes quite radically for her, where she might say, well, there's no point in me waiting and seeing beyond December because I'm not going to get the possibility of this this money, and I may as well get vaccinated now. And so I think that, you know, potentially incentives do have quite an important role in just changing people's outlook slightly and delivering a substantially better outcome for everybody. Because if people like that do get vaccinated and decide to do it, having regard to this national target and the benefits that would come from that, then, you know, I think we could get a much, much better outcome.
Okay. So how could it work, Isaac? I just want to go back over that. So would there be, like, if I go and get vaccinated, I'd get like some payment, but then if the nation as a whole or the state or whatever or the local government area, that reaches a certain percentage, so say 85 or 90%, then I then get another payment as well down the track, or I go into a draw, and it would have to be a reasonable chance of winning some sort of prize, wouldn't it, to motivate people rather than just say the same chance you'd have in a lottery. Have you thought about what type of probabilities or odds would have to be involved?
Yeah. So just to be clear, in my scheme, you wouldn't get any payment unless we meet the national target.
Okay.
So no payment whatsoever. And it is a national target. You know, we are, believe it or not, I mean, it sometimes doesn't seem that way, but we are one nation. So often it seems like we're half a dozen or so, but we're one nation, and it makes most sense to meet. What we're trying to do is get a national target in terms of vaccination rates. That's the goal. And then Australia can open up. We can have international travel with far fewer restrictions and all the benefits that come from that, but only if we deliver that goal nationally. And so that's what we ought to do. But what I think, though, Gene, is that this scheme ought to be run at a state level. So each state is responsible for running their own scheme. And I think what we should have is a range of different prizes. There ought to be a dollar amount, like the Anthony Albanese suggestion. I think that's a brilliant suggestion. You know, so if you think about a lottery, what's the chance of winning a lottery? You can buy a lottery ticket for a dollar. So maybe that's the, you know, that maybe that's the expected value from a lottery is a dollar. Now if you can have a guarantee of $200 or $300 for being vaccinated, then that's a significant shift. Not for everybody, but for a lot of people, that would be a significant shift. If you're, you know, thinking, well, should I or shouldn't I, and when should I, it might bring forward that decision. So it's state-based, and it's a whole range of different things. So I think, as I say, a definite payment, but also then a potential lottery. Maybe there's 100 $1 million prizes for each state. But then I think the other thing that we can do here, because we've got a long lead time between announcing this thing, let's say we could announce this thing at the beginning of September. This is what we're going to do. The Victoria is going to do it. And it's going to have this stretch target, which is a nationally agreed stretch target, and it's going to have its own scheme. Then there's an opportunity to bring in business as well. And I think that's something that's been terribly lacking in some of these other schemes. Business has huge resources in terms of marketing expertise and in terms of, frankly, just money resources. And where are they in all of this? They're totally absent. You know, I mean, there's a lot of moaning. I mean, I think moaning is justified at some level about the lockdowns and so on. But isn't there an enormous amount of resource out there which is totally untapped at the moment that could help drive higher national vaccination rates? And they have a huge benefit if we can get to herd immunity. I mean, look at Qantas. Look at the benefit to them and their workers if we could actually get to herd immunity. It's enormous. So are they in this in terms of, you know, couldn't we tap into that and say, these guys ought to be sponsoring this scheme? You know, they ought to be underwriting the marketing. They ought to be providing prizes, you know, and they could offer free holidays. You could get other companies offering restaurant vouchers, cinema tickets and so on. And you can imagine that if we've got this long lead time between announcing the scheme and the actual draw, everyone would know that this prize pool is going to grow enormously over time as businesses come in and make contributions. And they wouldn't just be, those big corporations, but there would be local businesses as well doing the same, because they all want everything to open up. And I think the benefit of this is that not only do you tap into that resource and get these potentially a huge prizes available for people to really encourage them to do it, but you change the conversation, you change the dynamic from something where everyone's on the radio moaning and you switch on the TV and it's all terribly depressing, to a much more positive conversation about what can be achieved and what's out there in terms of potential windfalls and prizes for people in terms of doing the right thing.
Absolutely. So Commonwealth Bank just announced, an $8 billion profit or something. So we could encourage Commonwealth Bank to put some money into a national lottery pool. That's possibly an idea. What about employers compelling workers? You wouldn't necessarily want to see that, would you? I think our Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg's come out and said something. He doesn't support that. But is that the sort of, you're not sort of advocating that, are you? Just encouraging employers encourage their workers to get vaccinated?
That's right. I mean, we've got, you know, incentives, we've got carrots and sticks, haven't we? And you might think that sticks are pretty cheap compared to carrots. You know, these are expensive carrots that we're talking about, whereas sticks are, you know, we can just say, well, if you don't get vaccinated, we're going to sack you. And there's been a bit of that around as, you know, various companies are saying it's a requirement to go and get vaccinated, or otherwise you're going to lose your job. Now, that is just adding, I think, to the negativity. And I don't think it's the right thing. I mean, we used to live in a liberal democracy. I think now we're accepting a lot of infringements on our liberties, which have gone almost totally unchecked. You know, I don't think people have challenged that very much. I think we've just sort of accepted it. And I don't think it's right. I mean, I really don't think it's right that we ought to be forcing people to get vaccinated. I think if we had this conversation 3 years ago, you know, well before COVID was ever known, people would not accept that the government could decide, or your employer could decide, that you ought to be vaccinated, otherwise you lose your job. I don't think we want to live in a society like that. I'd much rather see people make their own choices about their health and what they would prefer to do. But I think it's also right that we make those decisions in the knowledge of what's at stake. And if we can encourage people to make decisions that are for the good of everybody, then we're going to get a better outcome.
Yeah. And so given these lockdowns are reportedly costing the economy, $1 billion or $2 billion a week, depending on who is making the, you know, has estimated it, that it seems pretty clear that some sort of, you know, money could be set aside for a program to encourage vaccinations, and it may well have a positive or a benefit cost ratio over one. It may well have net benefits. Have you thought much about that cost benefit analysis aspect of it, Isaac, and what the likely payoff would be?
Well, as you say, the current lockdown in Sydney, there's estimates that's going to cost $7.5 billion. So that would be some lottery, wouldn't it? You know, I think there's an enormous prize here. If we can say goodbye to COVID and to lockdown realistically by Christmas, there's an enormous benefit. You know, we all sort of know it. And the consequences of not doing it, you know, the consequences of languishing around the 50 or 60% mark in terms of vaccination rates, I think would be, well, they're not unthinkable. I think they're quite possible. You know, we could see this dragging on till next year, and even the year beyond. And, you know, when you think about the difference between a 70% vaccination rate and 90 in terms of outcomes, it's enormous, because at 70%, you're still talking about millions and millions of people not vaccinated. You're going to be talking about thousands and thousands of people hospitalized and sadly dying. And we're still going to get lockdowns, and these lockdowns seem to be coming longer and more frequent as we've got the sort of the Delta variant knocking on our door. So I think the payoffs are are pretty big. In terms of what the costs are, you know, some of this funding would be out of taxation. So, you know, if you're taking a very pure economic approach, you'd say, well, that's almost sort of free. It's just a transfer from future generations to current ones. But even if you counted that as sort of real money, you know, you didn't argue that that was just a sort of a transfer payment. You've still got a lot of scope, I think, here to spend money to encourage people to get those vaccination rates up.
Yes, yes. Now, it's a good point you make about, well, even if we get to 70%, we'll still have there'll still be millions of people unvaccinated. And so what we're seeing in the US at the moment, and particularly with the Delta variant and having the surge in cases in across the country, was it Biden who called it a pandemic of the unvaccinated, or it might have been Fauci? I'll try and dig that up. But yeah, that's a good point. And the federal government has done some modelling on, well, what's the rate of vaccinations to target. I think they settle at 70%, but Grattan was saying you should go for 80%. But even if you go at 80%, you'll still have, as soon as we open things up, then you will have, we will start seeing COVID cases and there will be deaths. I mean, it's inevitable. One thing we've hardly seen any COVID in Australia. I mean, you had the outbreak in Melbourne last year. Now they've got one in Sydney, but it's not like it was in the UK or the US. I mean, we've been relatively lucky. Yeah, but as we open up, we'll have to start. Yeah, we will start seeing cases, and I'm not sure exactly what the end game is, Isaac. I'm just rambling on this, but I think your proposal is one that should definitely be considered by decision makers.
Yeah, well, think about Britain. You know, I don't think Britain's got to 70% yet, Gene, but they've opened up. They've had their Freedom Day, and they've opened up. And you might take some encouragement from the fact that the numbers now are coming down. You know, their daily cases are coming down, and the numbers of people dying are coming down as well. But I think we need to just keep in mind that in Britain, they've had 6.5 million cases and they've had 130,000 deaths. So when you see the numbers coming down now, you know, their numbers have come down to 20,000 a day, and they were a few weeks ago 50 or 60,000 a day. And when they took restrictions off, they were expecting those numbers to go up to 100,000 or 200,000 cases a day. That didn't happen. Mm. You know, that modelling didn't eventuate, and the numbers have now come down to 20,000 a day, and they're happy about that. You know, and the numbers that they're seeing in the hospitals are declining, and the number of deaths are declining. That's good, and they seem to have broken the back of it. But that's on the back of, as I say, 130,000 deaths and 6.5 million cases. Now, where are we? You know, I don't know what our total cases are and total number of deaths are, but we're a million miles away from that. And ironically, that means that the sort of target that we need to aim for to get acceptable outcomes for the community ends up being much higher. And the other thing that's going on here is the Delta variant is much more infectious. So there's a whole question about what you actually need to establish herd immunity. And the idea is that it's got to be perhaps higher than even 80%. But I think that we can, you know, in this, with this sort of suggestion that I've put forward, as I say, there's a lot of things that we can tap into, these relationships between people and the resources that businesses have. You can change the dynamic and you can change the conversation, and you can create a momentum behind achieving a national vaccination rate, which is way higher than the politicians would ever sign up to. You know, it's easy to sign up to 70%. But who's going to sign up to 90? They're not going to sign up to 90, but we could have an incentive scheme that says, government, you will let you off. You don't have to commit to this. This isn't about committing to a 90% target from a health perspective, a health policy perspective, but it's about just for the incentive scheme. If you can sign up to that, you know, payments are going to be made if we meet 90% or 85%, then we've got a chance of getting there.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. And I'd like to see some way of incentivizing the real influencers. I mean, I guess we call them influencers now, people who are popular on Instagram or Facebook, or people who've just are good at influencing their peers. So I remember years ago, like when I was doing Taekwondo, if you brought a mate in to sign up to Taekwondo, you'd get, I don't know, a couple of weeks of free Taekwondo classes or something like that here at the Johnson, where I've got a serviced office. If I find someone who takes a lease on a tenancy, then I get $500 or something like that. So that those sort of incentives, I'd like to see that, because I think there are people out there. We know in any community there are those people at the center of these networks. Are they nodes? I think they call them. I'm trying to remember what you call them.
Yes.
But yeah, they are hugely influential. So we can find some way of incentivizing people who encourage other people to get vaccinated. That might be a way to do it.
Well, Gene, go back to my barista example, someone that was waiting and seeing. If she's motivated to go and get vaccinated, because if she waits and sees beyond December, she won't get anything. And if she gets vaccinated before December, she will. So this becomes quite simple now. You know, if you're sitting on the, you know, on the fence here, she would go and get vaccinated. But she's interested not only in herself getting vaccinated, but she's going to be talking to her friends and seeing if they get vaccinated, because her payment's going to depend on them getting vaccinated too, her parents, her household, her colleagues, and so on. So, you know, we're all going to be interested in seeing what everyone else is doing. Not beating them over the head or doing anything we shouldn't do, but gentle persuasion of being able to say to them, if you got vaccinated, you know, we're only at 70% now, we need to get to 80 or 85, or, you know, whatever the number might be. And when you think about these prizes as well, there's a lot of room for competition of ideas and encouraging the good ideas to come to the top. You know, the Anthony Albanese idea, when he gets up and says $300 for everybody, Scott Morrison gets up and says, that's the worst, that's the most stupid idea I've ever heard. There's no way we're going to do that. If we have the states developing their own schemes, there's going to be competition in ideas between the states, and there's going to be these good ideas coming to the top and being copied from one state to the other. And one possibility is that you actually have prizes for households that reach 100% and for workplaces that reach 100%. So again, they're all conditional on meeting the national target that we're talking about. So they would only be payable if we met the 85% or 90% national target. But you could say any workplace that achieves 100% is going to be eligible for its own particular draw, its own particular lottery of $1 million or $5 million dollars or whatever it is. And then you can imagine, can't you, that those offices we want safe office places too. So there's a good reason why we want the whole office to be vaccinated, but now there's an extra reason why, and it's that all that office is going to be eligible for some lottery, some potential prize. And then you can see the people in the office are then going to be motivated to encourage each other to get vaccinated. So this is something that in one way is very simple, but in another way, it's really going back to that thing that we talked about at the start, which is what's the market failure here? And the market failure is really this idea that there's an interconnectedness which we're trying to grapple with, the fact that we're really interested not related, but the net result, the total, what the whole society look like. And we're just, you know, in that society, we're all combinations of people that know one another, all different networks. And we need all those networks to come together to drive those vaccination rates up and to achieve the national target.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just occurred to me, you could design these prizes so that you're getting an extra benefit because, well, let's offer holidays to the Gold Coast or the Whitsundays or to Cairns, and Cairns has just had a mini lockdown up there in far north Queensland. So you could have it as, well, prizes, accommodation packages for tourism tourism destinations, and that could be a way of helping out those local economies that have suffered to an extent because of lockdowns and interstate border closures.
Yeah, and I think the great thing is that by having this date, this end date, you create a momentum there and an enthusiasm for what's going on, which is quite different to this idea that we're just handing out vouchers, you know, every day to the people that are queuing up and getting vaccinated. You know, we're all seeing the prize pool grow. So each of the states would have their own individual prize pools. They're going to get sponsors from these big national corporations, And also they're going to get these particular prices that you're talking about, Gene, these holidays or other things that are going to be, you know, companies are going to come to the party over a period of time, and we've got time. So we can make use of this time between now and December, say, the end date, for this prize pool to grow. And everybody that gets vaccinated now would know that the prize pool is going to grow, because we're going to get good marketing from everyone explaining how the scheme works. Businesses are going to come forward. Prize pool is going to grow over time. So go and get vaccinated now. And the other thing that's just worth mentioning is that eligibility for this prize, in my scheme, you would be eligible if you had one vaccination. But if you had two vaccinations, so if you had both jabs, you'd sort of get two tickets in the lottery as well. So that would ensure that you've got an incentive to go early, you know, make sure you get your both inoculations. If you only get one, you're not ruled out, you're still in it. But if you get two, then you've got sort of, if you like, two tickets.
Right. So that's because even getting one jab, that gives you some level of protection, doesn't it? And so there is a benefit to the community from that. I'll have to research what the – I know that they want you to get two jabs, don't they? But there is still some level of protection from one. Okay. Right. Just on that time-limited aspect of it, I think that's a great idea. And the marketing gurus like Seth Godin, they'll say that that adds tension to it. So in any marketing exercise, it's important to have the tension. So you have to be confronted by it. Well, with an offer, it's much better if it is – time limited, oh, this expires in 24 hours, otherwise people will just keep putting it off. So I think that's a really good idea. Okay, Isaac, this has been a great conversation. Is there anything else you'd like to, any other points you'd like to make before we wrap up?
No, I think that's really it, Gene.
Okay.
Thank you very much. It's been good to talk to you about it, and hopefully there's some traction here somewhere, you know, that someone in the various state governments will pick it up. And I think just one thing to note is that I don't think we don't need all the states to agree. So, you know, the other issue here is that, well, you know, won't it take an awful lot of time for everybody, for all the states to agree how it's going to work, and for the federal government to agree to it, and for the target to be set and all of these things? It's going to take so long for people to do that, we're just going to run out of time. My idea here is that we set up a pretty simple framework. Maybe the federal government pays half the cost, only if it's successful. You know, so if it's successful, federal government pays half the cost. And if it's not successful, they don't pay anything at all. And the states have to foot their own bill. And each state can just join up if they want to join up. And if they don't want to join up, don't join. So Victoria can go it alone, or New South Wales can go it alone, or Queensland can go it alone. And they can go ahead with this scheme. And the federal government should put its hand in its pocket for half the cost if it's successful. And I think what you'll get there is pretty quickly states realising, well, we better join up, because what's the benefit of not joining? Not much. You're going to be punished, I think, at the ballot box if you're languishing with a pretty poor vaccination rate in Queensland, if Victoria has managed to get 80 or 90% or even higher by doing something constructive and positive.
Yeah. And these ideas, they're not just for Australia, are they? They could be adopted by US states, for example, because they've still got an issue. They've still got tens of millions of people unvaccinated, and there's currently Delta is going through that unvaccinated community in the States.
Yeah. So they've got 93 million people unvaccinated, I think was what Fauci was saying the other day. So, you know, in a way that they've got, I mean, our lead time here, I mean, it's worth saying that, you know, economics isn't going to solve the supply side here in terms of vaccines. That's for the government to sort of work out how on earth we get the supply of vaccines up to, you know, to the appropriate level. So our end date, you know, that we're talking about here is driven by supply constraints. We're picking an end date whereby, you know, those supply constraints have been resolved. But I think it's handy from a sort of marketing point of view. In the US, I don't think they've got any supply issues, but I think they still probably need to choose an end date, Gene, sometime down the track. So they ought to be saying, look, you know, by December, we're going to knock this thing over, you know, and run these things again. Again, they can run it on a state-by-state basis and have a national target, and some states are going to do poorly. and some states are going to do very well. But, you know, what we're interested in, what they should be interested in, is really getting that national vaccination rate up. And if you've got some problems in particular states after the date, if you like, then you'll need to deal with those separately, you know, in some other way. You may actually have to have local lockdowns and so on, unfortunately, in relation to particular states if they've done poorly. But yeah, I think it is an idea that could be used in other countries. I think you've got to think about the design, perhaps, you know, if there's particular issues that need to be resolved in particular countries, have a think about the design, think about what sort of lotteries or prizes make most sense in different countries and so on. But yeah, I think the idea is a good one because, as I say, it's really hinged around the thing that we're aiming to do, which is that national vaccination rate, not encouraging. I mean, obviously, encouraging individuals is key, but that's not only part of the story. And that's where a lot of this stuff on lotteries and prizes falls over because they are just focused on individuals, not the national outcome.
Absolutely. Okay. Isaac Katz from Harding Katz, thanks so much for the conversation. That was fantastic. Thank you. Yeah,
thanks, Jim.
Okay. That's the end of this episode of Economics Explored. I hope you enjoyed it. If so, please tell your family and friends and leave a comment or give us a rating on your podcast app. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, you can feel free to send them to contact@economicsexplored.com and we'll aim to address them in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Till next week, goodbye.